wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
We're here in the new basement studios by the lake, a big entertainment show this week.
Big. Well, I mean, it's a two-topic entertainment show.
Well, but it's still big.
Yeah.
Because
all our shows are big.
All our shows are big, including, let me just give a shout-out to anyone who's not been with us over the summer, including our best-of special that we put up last time.
Yeah, I haven't sent an email about that yet, but...
Can I quickly ask, are you happier with this year's best-of special? I know last year you felt like you were... somehow sublimated down the order.
I can't say because I haven't entirely listened to it yet.
Shocking. And then you wonder why other people don't listen to us. Let's get going. Yep. Two topics this week.
Yeah, two main. First one, Billy Joel. Second one will come to Emmys later on, you know, meaning the Emmy Awards.
So it means this is going to be clips of TV shows and clips of Billy Joel.
Yeah, some of that.
I was about to call him Sir Billy Joel, which I think I might circle back to that a bit later as we talk about him. But the reason we're talking about Billy Joel is that you and I both went to a Billy Joel concert last week.
Right, not together technically.
Yeah, not together.
We were in the same place.
We did text each other.
That's right.
In very much a high school 16-year-old girl type way. We did text each other during the performance.
I was about to say we were more sarcastic, but I imagine nobody would be more sarcastic than a high school, 16-year-old kind of thing. So it was sarcastic. It was appropriate.
It is appropriate.
Yeah, we went to – so he played at Nationals Park, which is where the Washington Nationals play, you know, baseball stadium. This is part of a tour. He's not doing like a heavy-duty like show up somewhere every 2 days. But basically, since March, he's been appearing in various places around the country. Summertime, like right coming up this week, he's going to be at the ballpark in Philadelphia.
Okay.
But he's been doing a bunch of places like that. I think earlier in the year, he was doing indoor arenas, of course, because it was too cold to be outside kind of thing.
Can I ask you a question? Because I think I need to confess right now before everyone, I don't know much about Billy Joel, and I'm not an entirely huge Billy Joel fan, and we will come to that a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
When you said this is not a major tour, but he's still playing, I guess what that means is it's not, you know, 5 nights a week. But it was a major event playing in a baseball stadium last week in front of 35,000 people. So what I mean is this is still, at least during the summer months, this is a heavy-hitting, big event tour.
Yeah, in fact, a Billboard runs statistics on, like, gate, you know, how much money everybody's making on tour, and he's on the top of the ranks right now.
Really?
Like now that can change from week to week. I'm trying to find my information on this stuff, but
because it was packed, the stadium was packed.
Yeah, and you would guess so. I never 30, found out 000? The right number. It's certainly 30,000 plus, and probably closer to 40. But the ranking, Billy Joel's. This is off of Billboard. Billy Joel hits Hot Tours home run.
Oh,
on ballpark run. Billy Joel makes his second appearance in the summer at number one on the weekly listing of Hot Tours, with sales reported from his third sold-out concert at Major League Baseball Stadium. He leads this week of slate of performers with $4.2 million gross from his performance on July 26th at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C.
So that's just one night. He's $4 million
the information.
Ahead of the game.
I should have read this in advance.
You should have.
Drew a crowd of 38,487.
So there you go. Nearly 40,000 people.
Gavin DeGraw opened up for him.
That's right. Dude who I didn't know who he was, but... You know, when he sang one or two songs, I'm like, yeah, I've heard that on the radio in the background.
So he takes down $4.2 million gross. Second place was Michael Bublé, who had only had $2 million. So, and that was with 3 dates, and those are smaller places.
What sort of music is Michael Bublé? Is he a saxophonist?
No, he's singer? He's like a pop opera kind of guy, I think. Isn't that right? No, Bublé might be he's sort of Harry Connick Jr.-ish. I'm mixing my people up. It's somebody that the other member of the household likes. I just don't really have track at the moment of who it is.
I don't think I could bring myself to buy a Michael Bublé album, just that I wouldn't want to go into the store if, in fact, that's how I was buying my music and go, oh, do you have the latest Bublé?
Right.
There's just something about that.
Keith Urban at...
once got hit in my Bublé, so very painful.
Keith Urban at... $1.3 million. Oddly enough, so they do this each week. Get this, like Keith Urban, June 29th and July 24th. Oh, maybe this is monthly.
Keith Urban, of course, married to Nicole Kidman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And one of those dates he did was in Australia, her home. And then the other one was in Guilford, New Hampshire. So go figure whatever that means.
So, because I know we're going to start with this. That was my first ever stadium experience when it comes to music. Now, unlike you, I have gone to quite a bit of music in my time, but as I've got older, these moments have become...
The first half of your time, basically.
First half of my time. Over the second half of my time, these moments have become fewer and further between. So, yeah, at my indeterminate middle age, that was the first time I'd gone to a stadium show.
Yeah, and I've been to quite a few. I'd go to a lot of music now, but mostly at smaller places. Pretty rare that I go any place that big. It was just because it's Billy Joel's legendary character.
It was a baseball stadium. Not just the number of people, but just the size of it. And
even indoor arenas, I tend to try not to go if I'm going to end up sitting like way off in the far end in the upper rafters. It's just too far away. Like if you have to only watch the screen because you can't really see what's going on the stage, you know, meaning the video screen.
Yeah.
That, for me, is not quite a personal musical experience.
Well, I mean, maybe we should start there, because I know the stage was set up basically in the outfield. So there was a whole load of seating on the field.
Right.
Of which, that's where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing I was about 100 yards back. And, I mean...
You were outside of second base, because they had the infield covered. And so consider center field is usually 390 feet or something like that. I don't think you would have been – I don't think you were any more than 50 yards away.
Okay. Put it again, at my middle age and my eyesight, it felt like I was 100 yards
away.
Because even though you've just said you don't want to go to these things and look at the screen, I was right in the middle on the field. I think these tickets were a couple of $100 at least. So in the great scheme of things – I had, and I'm now doing that thing with air quotes, I had good seats.
Yeah.
And yet, weirdly enough, I felt miles away.
Yeah,
so I can't imagine. You were now sitting actually in the main stand.
Right, in the seats on the first baseline just outside towards the outfield. So
can I ask you a question?
Good vantage point because you don't have any heads in your way, but pretty far away.
Were you sure that it was Billy Joel? From back there, can you make him out? I mean, that's my thing about
this. I couldn't recognize – I mean, if he was walking down the street at that distance, no, I would not have recognized him. But I could kind of tell it was him because he was up in front of a piano.
Okay. But that's what I'm saying now about the stadium experience. You were – again, I had expensive tickets, and yet I felt I was right on the edge of being removed from the action. And that's my point. I've spent my whole life watching music in small clubs or small indoor theaters where – even your worst seat, you're still sort of in touch. I felt, you know, outside, under the stars, down on field level, nice, but I still felt miles away. Like, I did find myself watching the screen the whole time because it's much preferable for me to watch.
It's hard not to, even when you're close, because you when you look at that, you can see more detail, and then you're just watching it. And then you suddenly – I always, when I go to these sort of big things, I sort of realize – you know, I should go ahead and look at the whole stage because there could be things other than the head that's on the big screen kind of thing.
Yeah. I was, again, and I know for nearly everyone else in the world who's already seen music in a stadium, I am way, way behind the curve. I was pleasantly surprised at how well the quality of the show was.
Like the sound.
Was very good.
I mean, better at it than they used to be.
Like, yeah.
So, I mean, and I'm not so old that I know about, like, you know, the Beatles coming to Shea Stadium kind of thing, which was, you know, one of the original stadium type concerts. But I went to
I think it was the first,
you know, in the late 80s, I went to Giant Stadium to see some tours. And if you're far away in those places, I remember one concert we went to where it was breezy, and whichever way the wind was going, it would change the sound of the music from where you were. Because if the wind was blowing in towards the speaker, it kind of like it wavered. It was like the whole music was bending. I think that was for the Monsters of Rock tour,
that be the Monsters of Rock?
Yeah, that's definitely how they would have announced it. Van Halen, Metallica, all these other bands.
Oh, it's a heavy hitting act.
Oh yeah, it was pretty big.
Yeah, look at you.
They set them up now. If you're on the floor, you're usually going to get good sound now. The where it gets a little bit dicier is in the second tier where we were. I don't know if you noticed, behind you there's a second bank of speakers that's designed to carry the noise and the proper delay out to the air. The trouble is echoes, and this is what drives me nuts in the stadium concert where we were. You could, on certain songs, hear an echo from left field, like from the left field bank. So, like, because the sound was going across and we were on right field side, meaning the stands on the right field, on the first baseline, let's say, music would bounce off of the third baseline. So when they would play things with big drums, you could hear like a sort of a secondary sound that muddied the water up. So the sound was not what I would call great.
Probably meant that Billy Joel was very assertive. Like, he wasn't just an innocent man. He was an innocent, innocent man.
Well, this of course, brings...
And the uptown girl wasn't just uptown. She was uptown, uptown.
Right, right. Well, in fact, I mean, that's what... I'm bringing on Innocent Man because I have all the songs lined up. They played this in the show. This is not the version from the show. Of course, we didn't bootleg it or anything like that, although we could have if we wanted to.
We could have, yeah.
But I put a bunch of the tracks together that came from the song. But so, like, listen to this, right? Pretty quiet, right?
Yes.
So he's playing in this tour with, you know, an 8-person band, you know, drums with big, big, you know, rock drum sound. He's got somebody on congos, people on multiple guitars, a second set of keyboards, right? So the problem is, like, hear that drum beat. Like, when you were listening to this in the stadium, it was like boom, boom, and it would echo off of the other side. It was just too much. This was my biggest complaint about the sound. It's partly from the stadium, but partly it's when these bands tour.
Because that's the question I'm going to get to in a moment.
Yeah, it changes the character. I mean, so much of Billy Joel's songs.
This is what I want to say. Is Billy Joel, and we're going to talk about Billy Joel and Billy Joel the musician shortly, but I'm now talking about this whole notion of watching bands in stadiums. Yeah. Is it almost, you know, running counter to who Billy Joel is,
right,
to be in a stadium with 40,000 people where you actually, at some level, you actually have to have a big band and you have to behave like U2, otherwise, right, it's all going to seem a little strange.
Exactly.
Because no one wants to sit in the upper deck of a stadium and see Billy Joel, you know, 100 yards away and have him just play on the piano and... I think they
assume that's the case. And I guess there's some element to that, that you'd be like, people will be sitting in their seats. They're not going to jump up and dance around unless it's too loud. But I think that undersells the sophistication of the audience. I think it's the case of when they arrange the show,
okay,
they're going to have a band. They have an 8-person band and they're like, this is the way we're going to do all the songs. We need something for everybody to do. You know, there's some bands that will send people off for parts. They'll have an acoustic set. You know, not that you do an acoustic set with Billy Joel, but you could do a milder set. Just chill it out up there, folks. And that's the thing that bugged me the most, is that it was way too big and brassy for a lot of stuff. They had tons of horns, which, of course, a bunch of Billy Joel songs have, like, saxophone
sure
parts. But that, you know, they don't all have that sort of stuff. I'm just like, chill it out up there.
Have you seen Billy Joel before in a different venue?
No, I haven't.
So this was the first time you've seen him.
Which probably, if I'd seen him before, I would have been less motivated. I'm going to go to this because, I mean, how much longer is this 65-year-old guy going to tour?
Is that how old he is?
I think so.
Oh, wow. Quite amazing, yeah.
Yeah. He's had two replaced hips.
Oh. I just read
that this morning.
It's a good thing he's a pianist.
So for contrast, we went and saw last year the Beach Boys at an outdoor amphitheater, pretty big.
Okay.
We had much closer seats, mind you. But the Beach Boys as a studio, their band, when you think of the Beach Boys, you're thinking of a studio sound. You're not thinking of a live sound because they spent so much time arranging all those harmonies and all that stuff to sound so super polished. I was pretty skeptical going in that this would be a particularly good concert. I mean, they're really old. They're in their 70s now. And it blew me away. I mean, they had a whole bunch of extra musicians and stuff to back it up, but they knew how to deploy them so much better. Maybe this is a Brian Wilson thing. You know, he's the great arranger kind of guy. But they deployed them so much better than Billy Joel did, so that each one of the songs had the right amount of density. It felt right. They made it sound good on that stuff, and I was very impressed with it.
All right, so I'm going to start coming with first of my controversial takes. Do you think... And I'm now talking about aging rockers and aging musicians in general. Do you think – I know that – we talked in conversation before the show. You are not overly enamored by the notion of Billy Joel coming out on stage and having another 12 guys backing him up.
Right.
But in terms of what you've just said about the Beach Boys, is there a sense as these guys get into beyond middle age – that these extended arrangements are, to an extent, a way of propping up the lead artist? And I'm not having a pop at Billy Joel, but he's 65 years of age. I cannot imagine You know, what I'm saying is, if you and I are still podding when we're 65 years of age, there's probably going to be a younger guy on a third mic keeping the conversation moving in between. Do you know what I'm saying here? Do you think that's also...
No, they're absolutely. I mean, I will say, I don't think that is the case in the Beach Boys thing. And I don't know about if it's propping up, but it's a sense that they can't carry that
But that's what I mean. Now, propping up is the wrong word, right. But they're there to, you know, can
fill it out.
Fill in the sound.
So we saw Paul Simon a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And there was another one. There was 80 million people on stage, and sure, that works well for Graceland songs and things like that. But then when he went back to old Simon and Garfunkel tunes, I was like, there's too many people up there. Just play this song normally. And I go to see a lot of Fish shows. And Fish is, at this point, would qualify as old. I mean, they're older than I am.
Okay.
And so, but they have always had parts of the thing where they've done just a cappella singing and things like that. And they just have maybe because they've toured so relentlessly, they have and their fans, I should say, are so knowledgeable about what they're going to do. They can count on the crowd to behave and things like that.
Okay.
But they have the confidence to be like, you know what? We haven't added any band musicians. It's just the four of us up there. And we might do some stuff where we just sing. I've seen them do a cappella stuff indoors where they don't even use a microphone. They just stand at the edge of the stage and they could be confident enough that the crowd will be quiet and they'll sing something, just nothing between you and them.
I also think, though, but you are now talking out about a band similar to the Grateful Dead in terms of it is a very special relationship between the people that go and the band.
So it's probably a bad comment.
Which I think is slightly, but I do understand what you're saying. This was my thing a little bit, though, in general about the stadium experience. The sound was terrific. Now,
I think it's more terrific if you're down on the floor in front of it.
Okay.
And that's what I try to do. Any big concert, I'd rather be down there if I don't have to spend $200 on a ticket.
But let me say this in general about me now. I think actually on this show, I have been critical of actually going to live music because I'm like, why would I want to go and listen to anything that's not as good as the recording? That being said, where I was 70 yards back, if I closed my eyes, the sound was terrific. But in a weird way, for me, and you know me, I'm permanently moving the goalposts to make myself look correct. The sound was almost too good. I'm like, I'm not at a concert. I'm listening to a CD. Well, what's the point? I've paid $200 to listen to a CD. You must be joking. It was almost too good. Now,
yeah, but it was so... I'll give it this. It was all different in a similar way because you had the big band. But the one thing you can say about it... It did. These songs did not sound like, it didn't sound like, well, I'm trying to find a song.
Well, find a song, because I guess we're now going to segue on to Mr. Joel himself. And we're going to have slightly contrary views. Debate is healthy.
Yeah.
You got to turn the mixer up. It's a good thing you weren't working at the concert, because it would have been dead silent. There you go.
She can kill with a smile. She can.
She's always a woman. Okay. There's no way that what you saw, like if you had closed your eyes during the concert,
no, but you know what?
It would not have sounded like this.
I expected it. Maybe I should explain myself more.
You should.
It didn't sound that good. But I've gone to shows where it's taken me 10 seconds to identify the song just because the nature of playing music live is different from arranged music. You can listen to an album and it fades in and it fades out. Whereas,
produced.
It's produced. Whereas a live act has to finish on a boom, big beat. Because that's what it does.
Well,
so that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you can't fade it out.
The stadium experience, what I'm saying is the songs heavily replicated the same sort of beat and tone of the recorded song. It's not a lie. Like what I'm saying is he played versions of his songs. What he wasn't doing was playing a live version. Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to find the words to define improvising.
That's what I'm saying. Right, like, it's all very well produced.
Like, yeah.
And I don't know if that's a combination of his age, his act, modern technology, the stadium experience. Well, okay. I'm not suggesting every musical experience should be this way. And obviously I'm now older where I don't want this kind of musical experience anymore. I remember back once... way back in the depths of time, going to see Pete Shelley in a small club. Pete Shelley was the lead singer for the Buzzcocks. Have you ever fallen in love?
Yeah.
Went out on his own. So we're talking late 80s. Took a mate of mine for his birthday. I've told this story before. We stood right at the edge of the stage. He was right above us. When he's singing, he's spitting on us. It is an interactive experience. The songs you kind of identify now and again. You can hear drums banging and guitars thrashing. What I'm saying is, and I know this is now an unfair comparison because it's a different sort of music, but Billy Joel had about 15 to 20 guys behind him, and it was all really, really well produced. But I felt it was almost produced to the effect that I was seeing Billy Joel, but I wasn't seeing Billy Joel live.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what I mean?
Here's the funny thing. Right,
there was no rough edge to any of it anymore.
Well, realize, you know, there was an era in the 80s or something like that when you would see a band and great, great bands, you'd go and then you'd say that concert was horrible because they would have no idea what they were doing up on stage. And we've now evolved to a point in terms of putting on these big concerts that they can be that good. What, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, you want it to be sloppier? You joked yourself about moving the goalpost, mind you. But it's kind of I think this is the other than the density of the band and the overplaying it, I think this is the right way. He's not an improv guy. I mean, it's kind of let's start talking a little bit about him.
Let's
and
do
his
it. Yeah.
Music kind of thing. Like, so
I'm ready to put the boot in.
Put the boot in. You know, that's nonsense just because, well, we'll get to that.
Play a song and I'll...
Right? But just to talk about improvised songs. So this is one of the most famous Billy Joel songs. Scenes from an Italian restaurant. And this song has got... I forget how long it is, but it's... A bottle of white. It's 7 minutes, so it's pretty decently long. But it's got all these different parts.
Yeah.
This would be the kind of thing that, like, other bands would... improvise into this whole long thing, but this, even in the studio version, but in the live version, same thing. It hits a certain point in the song, it changes. It did everything. It was like a big band number,
yes,
instead of jazz, you know, kind of thing.
Which leads me, I guess, because we're now going to talk about Mr. Joel. I went to the show as a skeptic. It's not my cup of tea.
Apparently you left as a skeptic as well.
Well, no, because again, I'm now going
to
not move.
I do want to point out, just before we get into this, so maybe we won't talk about me for a second. Yeah, so let's get the roles. Let's put the roles together. Zeph is a skeptic, comes from England, doesn't really have a big background in Billy Joel.
I didn't know. Well, before you go on, let me say something. I have no background in Billy. When I was a kid growing up, the only Billy Joel song that made mainstream radio that was a hit was Uptown Girl.
Right.
So by the time I arrive in America, I have heard one Billy Joel song.
Right.
Because, now, and again, it was a different era back then, Billy Joel ended up on AOR, Adult Orientated Rock, which was confined to 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon when I was watching football. So I didn't have...
Here's where the song changes the first time.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, it's like a whole different song.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Do you want to finish your point there?
No. So you come at it from that perspective, but yeah. I come at it from, I'm from Long Island originally. I'm a pretty big Billy Joel fan, but I don't have like a rack of his albums. I've got two out. I've got Glass Houses I have on LP I got when I was a kid. I think I have, like, later in life, I bought some of his older albums. You know, you go back with your CDs, and so I bought, like, The Stranger and Innocent Man on CD, so I'd have those. But that's pretty much it. I happen to know of some people, having grown up in Long Island, who are like, this is the greatest. And you were attending with a person, or
from Long
people,
Island, people,
multiple
from
people
Long Island,
from Long Island, who are... would profess themselves to be huge Billy Joel fans.
Yeah,
listen, you already didn't have a background. It wouldn't have been a thing you were a fan of. But we also know that you were something of a contrarian.
Right,
so I imagine your attendance with people who are big fans, if anything, would make you more likely to resist it.
I understand it. But let me make my point now about this.
Yeah, I just want to set the table.
Let me make my point about it. So before the concert, and for some reason, these people wanted to get to the concert like 3 hours beforehand. I felt like I was tailgating before the cup final.
That's what people do.
Not me. When I was younger, I'd get to events earlier. Now I'm older and with wisdom, I figured out how to get to my seat a minute before it starts. So I don't have to
You can get to your seat in minutes before, but you want to hang around before.
So let me say this. So before, yes, I'm a
Get your chicken fingers.
I didn't have anything to eat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it felt a bit strange going to a Billy Joel concert and having a hot dog. It just felt weird.
Well, it's at the ballpark. He even put on a Nationals cap during the show.
Because he's a panderer. So, Billy Joel's not my thing. But I'm going to now sort of challenge one statement that was made to me. Someone said to me, Billy Joel's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, I understand I'm a contrarian, so I'm immediately looking for a fight. My reaction is, this isn't rock and roll. And I think that's quite a fair musical statement.
I don't know.
You've just played those songs, and again, let me finish. Right. I'm not saying he's not really good at what he does. It was an excellent show. He was terrific. Not my kind of music. But when someone says to me it's rock and roll, it's not. He's a piano man. And again, I don't mean this in a derogatory way. He's a lounge singer. To me, there's more in common between Billy Joel and Barry Manilow than there is between Billy Joel and, let's say, another rocker from his area, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, that's totally wrong. There's no way that...
But to my untrained ear, that's what it sounds like. Yeah. You just played a song there, and there's a part of me thinking, that's not Billy Joel, that's Leo Sayer. But I'm serious, and I'm not knocking it. But to come to me now like, well, he's a rocker. No, he's not. There is no edge. There's no... What's the matter with the clothes I'm wearing? Can't you tell that your
tie's too wide? This is rock in the 70s, buddy.
Well, again, we're getting down. Okay, so I need now.
This song is even called It's Still Rock and Roll to Me.
It's still rock and roll to Billy Joel. What it's not is rock and roll to Zeph of the Atlantic Boys podcast. I'm going to make a legitimate point while you bop away to that song, which sounds vaguely disco-related. Who knows? Our musical tastes are always defined as where we're from. And while I appreciate that passes for rock and roll in the 70s and 80s on Long Island, it doesn't pass for rock and roll in North London in the 70s and 80s. So that's all I'm saying. I'm not knocking him.
I'll tell you what about the whole rock and roll.
So that's my only point. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. No, he should be in a Hall of Fame, but a different Hall of Fame.
Why does the punk-influenced version of rock and roll, the 70s, 80s, have any entitlement to be called rock and roll? That's not what rock and roll was through the 60s. It might have, like, punk, that's why it had a different name. So punk is not rock and roll. Punk is punk rock.
I'm going to have an honest debate now about rock and roll. Rock and roll needs to have guitars thrashing and drums banging. You can bring your piano, your violin.
Guitars come in here shortly.
Have you ever seen the band in the Blues Brothers that are playing in the lounge and the Blues Brothers go, we're putting the band back together? They're playing in the lobby of the Holiday Inn.
That was lounge.
Well, here you go. This is my point now about Billy Joel. And again, it was a very pleasant experience. It's a bit like being beaten to death by a Swiffer. Feels quite nice. You don't really know that it's killing you. But when you wake up the next day and someone says, did you hear about Zeph? He was beaten to death by a Swiffer. It's kind of an embarrassing way
to go. I'm not suggesting it's Rolling Stones, but it is rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm going to question that. I need to be fair here. It was excellent for what it was. So I am not challenging Billy Joel. I can't believe that people in Long Island are going, yeah, Billy Joel, rock and roll. Not the same part of the world that Springsteen and all these other Joes come from, where there is, again, and I think this is the thing about music. And I'm not going to be, think back, there is nothing rebellious about Billy Joel. Elvis was rebellious. Chuck Berry, and I'm now going back to the birth of rock and roll. You felt with Chuck Berry, someone might actually throw a guitar around. Elvis. Sex symbol, doing the dances, pushing the envelope. The Beatles show. What I'm saying is rock and roll isn't just what you hear. It's what it is.
Well, listen, put it
and
this
here's
way.
Here's my point about Billy Joel. He should be in the Popular Music Hall of Fame.
You painted me into the corner of basically defending as a straight
so
rock and roll thing.
No, but you're already in the corner.
There's a set of gradients. It's not all like one or the other. I mean, yeah, sure, it's not rebellious. He's a singer songwriter, like he's a Jackson.
Is Barry Manilow in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I have no idea. Maybe he is. I mean, look,
he shouldn't be.
People can go back to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame podcast and they will find there's lots of people in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame who you may debate whether they're rock and roll.
Yeah, let me tell you something. If I was in charge of that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a lot of people would be getting an envelope in the mail saying your membership is revoked.
Rock and roll is
I would be clearing that place out.
Claiming a rock and roll title is nonsense. I don't think any of these, there's popular music. And somebody somewhere in the 50s called this stuff rock and roll. Suddenly everything since the 50s is rock and roll? That's like – there's no chance that these music – there's like – and this leads into a debate of is the popular music – I'm not talking about the Katy Perry popular music. I'm talking about the indie rock music that's out now. the some of the bands that I've been giving you albums to listen to. Is that rock and roll?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, listen, if it's made completely with computers, is it rock and roll? Can be. But that's just because we have a fungible definition of rock and roll.
No, I understand. But I just feel at a certain moment there needs to be an edge to it. And like I say, even Chuck Berry, you sensed he might throw a guitar around. Billy Joel's not throwing a piano around. At least not at his. Not at his age. What I'm saying, it was terrific.
He did come out with a guitar at the very beginning. That was one of the reviews I read. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was for, what was that song? I'll play that since we're here.
Yeah, play it. Hit it. And again, part of it is the fact that I didn't grow up with him.
I mean, there's multiple guitars, but he's playing guitar during this. Because there's no piano in this.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell. I mean, listen, this is not going to make it into my top songs. In fact, I kind of hate this song, but it's, you can't say this. This isn't Burt Bacharach. You know, this is...
No, but you could get away with saying it's David Cassidy.
Sure, but what was David Cassidy? He wasn't a lounge singer. He's a pop.
If David Cassidy...
Pop rock.
David Cassidy could get into the TV Hall of Fame. What he cannot do is make any claim to the rock and roll.
Let's put aside the fact of the quality and the genre in which it's in.
All I'm saying is...
You know, he will be awarded, but it was announced, the Gershwin Prize, which is...
Can I ask you a question, though?
Yeah.
Considering the only song that I know from Billy Joel, basically, before I came to America, was Uptown Girl.
Not necessarily true, because we were playing just the other day. You just didn't know they were Billy Joel songs.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought it was someone else. I found it interesting that Uptown Girl ended up in the encore. Do you think at any level it is an uncomfortable experience for him to play that song?
No.
Because so much of that is his marriage to the blonde girl.
Christy Brinkley.
Yeah.
Right. No, I don't think it's uncomfortable. I noticed
that would be.
I was looking at his other dates and the set list.
His greatest hit.
His set list for the concerts were varying, except for the encore. The encore has been the same every single place, pretty much.
Oh, really?
It's been, yeah. But all the songs beforehand, he's been plugging things in.
I'm going to tell you what the best song of the night now is, and I want to give him a lot of credit for this. The roadie manager came out. And they played Highway to Hell by AC/DC. I've got to tell you something. At that moment, this is a rock and roll concert.
What you're saying is you like gimmicks. You are a fan of a gimmick.
No, I like rock and roll.
That was highly gimmicky.
There is an edge to my musical taste.
Yeah.
No, it was a very good show. I don't want to knock it.
So he just won. Just think about what genre he's in. He just won the Library of Congress's Gershwin Prize for Popular Song. Popular song. So,
and that's great.
The prior winners of
Paul Bacharach.
Is one of them with
That's
Hal David, but Paul Simon, Stevie Wonder, Paul McCartney, Carole King, him. It's kind of a recent award they invented. It's supposed to line up with the Mark Twain Award for comedy kind of thing.
Yeah.
But listen, I think, you know, he may have briefly overachieved there with that thing. But listen, when you those songs that he played 20 some odd songs, and like I said, I don't have all the albums. Every one of those songs was. Radio played song. There was nothing
yes,
was like deep
true.
Cut that nobody it's, had ever it's heard before.
But I also
thing.
Think
you
too,
had over in England.
But now I now want to
get into what.
Well, I now want to make this statement. What I found most fascinating about the concert. Now, obviously, you're from up that way.
Right.
The people I went with are up that way. I understand that when you're all of our age, Billy Joel, he is sounds of your youth in the same way as that when a Clash song comes on, it is a sound of my youth. I found it fascinating last week to look at that crowd. Going in, I imagined it would all be people my age or older. But I was surprised to see how many young people were at that concert. And I find that interesting. It speaks to Billy Joel's popularity. Again, I am not in any way torpedoing his popularity. All I'm saying is it's not my cup of tea. But I found that fascinating. So there is a pop sensibility. I mean, there were people in there. Teenagers, people in their 20s, and I'm thinking, how do you know all these songs from 1979 and 1983 and 1986? Because again,
it's
Billy Joel,
to show there's nothing good for them to listen to anymore.
That may be part of it, but what I'm saying is, Billy Joel isn't—he's not Paul McCartney.
No.
And what I mean by that is, and again, this isn't a criticism; this is just an observation. Paul McCartney has sort of ended. Paul McCartney. Arguably, the Rolling Stones have ended this sort of – they've ended this thing where they've become soundtracks of our lives in that every song, all of us have heard Satisfaction. All of us have heard a Beatles song. I found it interesting to see a very young crowd who seemed to get all these Billy Joel songs from 30 years ago.
Yeah,
well, and that surprised me.
No, I think it was very interesting in terms of segmentation of the crowd. You could tell there were people who – picked them up, and you know, maybe they were there in the original days in the 70s when these things were going on, or at least listening to on the radio. And I wasn't old enough to go to concerts in the 70s, but I was hearing it on the radio. And part of this, I think, in retrospect, I'm sure is geography, that, you know, all of the songs from the beginning for Billy Joel were on the radio in Long Island when radio used to be more regionally oriented and would play a band that
you
was
wore
local.
A Long Island t-shirt.
It's a farming t-shirt grown on Long Island.
Our sophomore girl high school texted each other during the concert moments.
But you could tell there was a group of people who picked up on him more in the 80s, and this song was my perfect example of it, where he introduces this song by saying it's the worst melody he's ever written, and yet, of course, he's obligated to play it because it was maybe one of his biggest hits of all time. Can't stand it. But there was a half of the population in the stands who jumped up and just were
raving about this song.
I forget how far we have to go.
Because this was a big MTV hit for him.
Right.
This is a guy whose career spanned pre-video and post-video.
We Didn't Start the Fire, which is just a litany of stuff, pop culture item.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny.
Or history stuff, too.
That was actually one of the first times I actually listened to the lyrics, and there was a part of me going, oh, he mailed this one in. Well, he didn't put any effort into this. This is the lowest energy in terms of effort put in and success of the song. He must be sitting there laughing because he goes, I didn't put any effort into those lyrics.
No doubt.
I mean, I hate
the most interesting thing about this was that they were playing video flashes of every single thing in his list, and so you'd be trying to catch up. I asked the other member of the household who I was at the show with, because there's a line that talks about children of thalidomide, which was like chemical born deformed babies. I'm like, what picture? They're flashing up Marilyn Monroe. What are they going to show up for? Children of thalidomide, and they actually had some child who was a problem, and I'm. Hate this song.
Yeah, and yet it brought the house down.
It did, and people were. And that's where I'm not even sure. Even some people who might not normally like that,
because it was
a well constructed set list for sure. Like they grouped things in a way so that like here's the part where we're doing some serious songs, and here's the part where we're going to do the rock and roll song. Because he goes from She's Always a Woman, which is a quiet song, to We Didn't Start the Fire, to Don't Ask Me Why. You know, so now we kind of getting up. But the section that was the most obviously grouped was when they did Goodnight Saigon followed by Allentown, which Goodnight Saigon, I mean, people know Allentown.
These protest songs,
they're not really protest songs,
because someone explained to me, oh, this is his Vietnam song, and then they played it, and I'm now not knocking anything to do with that, but I'm like, yeah, you're not protesting.
It's not really protest.
Again, this comes back to Billy Joel shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A protest song is you've either got lyrics that are saying wipe all the government out, or you're getting ready to throw some instruments around. These are, you know, very jaunty.
No, but will you listen to lyrics? It's about how they're closing the factories in Allentown, we're losing our jobs, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and he sounds quite happy that all this is happening. This is my point.
Yeah, but it doesn't all have to sound like a dirge.
Yes, it should.
Why?
Because getting unemployed is not a happy time.
But what does Born in the USA sound like?
Well, it sounds like there's guitars and noise.
Yeah, but it's the same kind of thing, but it's very jaunty. I mean, the politicians used to use, meaning Born in the USA by Springs, they used to use it as their entrance music, not having any idea that it was essentially a negative commentary on problems of being born in the USA.
Let me sort of semi-quote
Mr. Goodnight Saigon, they brought on actual Vietnam vets during the show, including a dog, which was good.
Yeah, and who looked a bit lost, frankly.
Well, never been on stage with a Billy Joel before.
Exactly. But he's probably sitting there thinking.
I did wonder whether, do you think they were local vets or do you think they have a touring set of vets they take with them? I think they were local because it was the first time they've been up on stage and they're all singing along.
Vietnam vets.
Yeah.
Not the dog's vet.
Right.
I think the dog looked a bit bemused as to why is this playing at a frequency that I can hear.
The thing about this song that's a little bit awkward is it has this helicopter intro. And they did that in the thing. And I thought to myself, if I'm a Vietnam vet, don't give me the cheesy sound effect. Just play the song. I'm going to move ahead because you got to get past. See, like this, it's just guitar. Actually, I don't. But they definitely had more band going on in this stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. And to paraphrase Mr. Joel, it's not rock and roll to me. Da-dum.
So they wrapped it up with like rock tunes. One of the interesting things, you know, I meant to talk about before.
Are we just going to do Mr. Joel for the whole show?
No, I don't think so. I think we got to move on. People will be going crazy. But so is, you know, the segmentation of the population on sort of stuff.
They're a very good show.
One of the interesting things he's doing now, and I think this is actually you when you were talking about what it's like seeing him and all, sort of made me think about this stuff in that he's not like Paul McCartney in that he's approaching that
a parody of himself.
Oh, well, that's true. Okay. No, but I mean people go to see Paul McCartney like without even caring whether he's any good. Like it just it's him, he's on stage, it's like a celebrity appearance. Yeah, you know, it's royalty walking out to pass its benediction on the crowd kind of thing.
You're actually going to pay homage.
You're still going to see him.
Yeah. It's been like going to Mecca.
You know, Billy Joel now has a standing gig at Madison Square Garden where he plays there once a month.
Very impressive.
So it's sort of like you're taking the notion of like a Vegas standing gig where, you know, where everybody comes to you, you kind of play in the same stuff all the time. But people are coming to see the music. It's not like the celebrity appearance of Paul McCartney.
I will say this. I mean, one of the great things about Billy Joel is that to a certain level, he is about his music, whereas what you say is Paul McCartney now means other things, and part of that is just because of, you know, so is that it for Mr. Joel?
I think so. I mean, a couple.
Very, very good concert. I question his eligibility in the Hall of Fame, and when I get down there, no offense, Billy Joel, because there'll be some other people, I'm going to be clearing some people out of that building.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through everyone, and you're going to have to re-interview with me about whether you should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or not. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line.
The next time we do our Hall of Fame thing, we will talk about the relative credentials. I think you got to say that Billy Joel comes in above
this Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we're going to have separate divisions. We can have the Easy Listening Hall of Fame. Sure. You have first choice of bedrooms.
Too many gray areas. Right. Let's just go with popular music. They should just call it the Pop Music Hall of Fame. The one other thing I would have mentioned, in addition to winning the Gershwin Prize, is he won the Newsday, is the local paper up on Long Island. He won the That's So Long Island competition, which was literally like a 64-person and item bracket. That. Like, and, you know, they talked about the, I think...
I do want to say this.
It was like things like the Hamptons and you know, Montauk's Lighthouse and you know, people like Dee Snider and Ed Burns and Debbie Gibson and Ralph Macchio and Jerry Seinfeld and Alec Baldwin and all this sort of stuff.
I do want to say this, and now Beatles fans may start really getting into me when I make this statement. Billy Joel is one of those artists, for whatever reason, is strongly identified with an area. And I really, really respect that.
He still lives there. And
I'm not going to throw a name at you if you are musically aware. A guy called Paul Weller, who you may have heard a little bit. He plays music. It's all about London. To go back, and I don't want to be kicking Paul McCartney. Although, you know, frankly, with his bank account, he can take it.
Yeah,
I do feel a little bit that. And again, part of this is because you're the Beatles, and to an extent, the Stones. They've washed. You know, the Stones, they're from London, but you don't think of that. Yeah, the Beatles are from Liverpool, but nowadays you don't think of that. Billy Joel, I'm a Long Island guy. Bruce Springsteen, I'm from New Jersey. And yeah, I appreciate that. I do like that in terms of an artist. I think, because I do think ultimately as an artist, I think you do need to speak to who you are. So I guess let's get to Emmys.
Yep.
So Emmys, of course, full of categories.
66th annual Emmy
Awards. Yeah, that's our segue. I've just challenged where Billy Joel is categorized. Now we're going to talk Emmys. And of course, Emmys being in awards is all about people being in categories.
Yeah, actually, there's an interesting piece on the category stuff. I don't know if you read anything about this, but...
Vaguely.
One of the shows, that HBO show that is up for Outstanding Drama, True Detective...
Okay.
Right. So there was a big to do when they came out with that, because the networks get to put in whatever they want to in whatever category. Like they can submit it. You know, obviously if you submit a comedy and a drama, you're probably not going to get nominated. But they put True Detective in, and True Detective was really a closed loop miniseries.
Yeah. We've had this debate, and you can actually find this debate on our Best Of special.
Right. So a bunch of people said, wait a minute here. You know, you're horning in on this stuff in order to cover all these bases. And in fact, in Outstanding Miniseries is Treme, which is another HBO thing. That is, in fact, a series. It's been on for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And so why that became a miniseries, I don't know. But apparently the thinking was HBO's new approach on the Emmys, or maybe not new approach, maybe it's their regular approach, is they don't really care if they win. What they're trying to do is cover all the bases.
It's free advertising.
Basically just, yeah, exactly. Because yeah. people don't care whether you're the winner of the thing. A nominee is enough. And I mean, so if they can stick somebody all over the place where basically you can't get away from HBO, it enhances HBO's reputation as the place to go for, you know.
But let me ask you a question about the Emmys, though. And I know the Oscars. The Oscars a couple of years ago, when they expanded the size of, not the number of categories, but the size of nominees in the categories.
Where they had like the 9 movies for Best Picture.
Yeah, in the film industry, I think there is a strong belief that there is a correlation between, you know, what awards you can stick on the poster or nominations you can stick on the poster and how well your film either is doing or will do. Do you think?
Well, yeah, but most of the movies are gone. I mean, sometimes they come back when they win their award. But
what I'm saying is,
I think it's more about the people who are involved making more money on their next movie.
And what I'm saying is, if someone says to me, oh, you should watch this show because it won an Emmy. What I'm saying is, if someone says to me, oh, you know, that movie won an Oscar, I'm going to go, really? I might give it a shot. I don't think the whole Emmy, the award of the Emmy, does it impact TV ratings in the way that a relationship with the Oscars can boost
I think it can. Like, so the Emmys have a habit of rewarding shows that have been on a long time. Like, even if they're not very good anymore, they continue to win awards, like The Office did.
Yeah.
Like, right now, the one they all talk about is
Modern Family.
Modern Family, which is still a funny show, but it's not nearly as funny as it was initially. And yet, they just cover the categories all the time every year, and you go, well, you know, it's not so impressive.
I do want to – well.
But on the other end of the spectrum, you had Brooklyn Nine-Nine last year, which Andy Samberg, didn't he win the Best Comedy Actor? They're not even nominated this year, but that got them a huge bump of publicity, and I imagine had to produce some additional watchers.
Yeah.
As a network item.
Yeah, I guess.
To come back to the HBO example, I don't think anybody cares about the show. Like, if you're HBO, their whole point is, I want HBO to be synonymous with quality, and this way more people will subscribe to it. They're not subscribing. Maybe they'll subscribe because True Detective is there. But what I want them to think is, there's always something good on HBO in their original series. I mean, so this is what Netflix is after now, right? Netflix, because there's a whole bunch of Netflix stuff nominated now. House of Cards, Orange is the New Black. I think Derek, that show with Ricky Gervais is a Netflix thing.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to do the same thing of basically, because they rely on people subscribing for $10 a month. They might hope you subscribe just for Orange is the New Black, but they know people don't want to pay $10 a month for one show. What they want to do is be a brand that people go, I'm always going to have something good to watch, even if, you know, they don't have the rights to stream the latest movies. I'm going to have a show I can watch.
No, you're right. It's about being. Because in a weird way, while the Oscars are about individual films, not studios, meaning 20th Century Fox, MGM, the Emmys, you are correct, they're not really about shows, they're about stations or channels trying to bump up their reputation and image. So in a weird way, you know, you're right. True Detective.
Because they're teams. That's what's different than movies. Exactly. It's like a team. You know, we're all NBC HBO or FX or whatever.
The director, you know, the individuals who show run True Detective are going to be pleased when they get an Emmy. But in a weird way, it's more important for HBO to be getting. You're right. Getting.
I imagine. Gross. I imagine in the Oscars, the same is actually similar for the studios. It's just we don't see it as obviously. Like, you know, Columbia and Sony, they all want to promote their stuff, and so they're looking at it from that perspective. But we don't see it the way we do for a network.
And
because when you go to a movie, you don't go, "Let me see the Columbia movie." I go to see a movie.
Yeah, and you're right. In terms of a public awareness, you know, Columbia. You know, Columbia, for example, are not going. We had 9 movies nominated for Oscars this year. Whereas an HBO or a Netflix or a BBC or a CBS, whoever they are, yes, it is about attempting to show this is why you should be watching our station all the time.
Yeah.
Even when this show's not on, you should be watching our station because, look, we have all these shows getting nominated. Was there anything about – I mean, we've got the categories here and we're not going to go blow by blow, but we are going to sort of maybe shout a few things out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start somewhere?
Yeah, well, I think we start with the list we happen to have is organized this way. First one's outstanding lead actor in a drama series. You got Bryan Cranston, Kevin Spacey in House of Cards, Netflix, Jon Hamm in Mad Men. He may win. He may be at the point now where they're like, this series is wrapping up. We need to give him an award. I don't think.
Oh, is he not won one?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But the most interesting thing is True Detective, we just talked about. Both Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey are nominated as lead actor.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that. Well, you couldn't get away with that in Hollywood. You couldn't. Oscars wouldn't allow that. One of them is a supporting actor. One is the star. One is the supporter.
Oh, by the way, I should mention before I start playing things, the one thing that's interesting with all this HBO and Netflix stuff going on,
yeah,
full of curses. Like, there's the Emmys. Yeah. Like, if you try to look for clips on YouTube, and by the way, we're going to put up on our YouTube channel, we'll have a playlist of a bunch of things. We're going to – way more than we're going to talk about here. But I pulled down a number of clips of the various people and that are associated with this. But there's curses all over the place. So if you're sensitive to that
–
if you're listening to this out loud at work, you might want to turn down your speakers.
But if you're if you listen to the Atlantic podcast in general, you're probably not offended by much, because you definitely don't seem to be offended by some of my moronic opinions. So.
Yeah, but that doesn't get you in trouble with your boss. You know, they might, I guess, go by. So, it's tough to find clips for some of these things. So True Detective, this is a scene between Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. I don't know. Actually, the thing is, they're too long for me to really have anything for it, but...
Change your hair?
It's fascinating.
Maybe we should talk.
Yeah?
Buy you a beer?
Sure. I'll follow you.
So I want to make a brief...
Just a slight punchline to this, which I'm trying to get to.
I want to make... Okay.
Actually, why don't you buy me a beer?
That's pretty much it I got for that clip. So this way I knocked out two actors with one stone.
Woody Harrelson is someone who, for whom my respect for him has gone up over the years. As he has matured as an actor, so has my opinion of him. I think he is far more talented than I ever used to give him credit for.
Well, he matured pretty quickly right off of Cheers. Like, everybody assumed on Cheers he was just the – plus he played a goofy, dumb guy, kind of thing. And that it was
– He has been terrific.
He pretty immediately went up to high level. Yeah. But in recent years, I guess he's selective enough about his roles and things like that that it's
I watched him play – I saw the end of The People versus Larry Flint.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he's terrific in that. I think he's had smaller roles in – he's in the one Coen Brothers movie, No Country for Old Men.
He's very good in that. He's in that one where they do him and the other soldier do the deliveries of bad news to all the families, and I have that sitting in my DVR and I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Woody Harrelson.
I don't think he's going to win. I mean, this is the year of Matthew McConaughey still.
He'll win.
Matthew McConaughey's going to win. And this, he had a much chewier part. Like, the two of them were very, very good, but in terms of what they got to do on the show, Matthew McConaughey had by far the more...
See, if they
you could
put,
really get involved
if they
into
put Woody Harrelson
mind you, in just let's point out, by the way, Zeph has not seen this show.
I don't watch any of these shows.
He's going to opine. He's going to win, but he hasn't seen
if
the show.
If they put Woody Harrelson in outstanding supporting actor, he would have dominated.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. But that would have said...
I mean, he's going against four guys I've never even heard of.
But I think HBO's point was they don't care whether he wins. The point is they have two nominees from one show and lead actor. They put in these things and they both got the nomination. Because actually, in a way, I mean, I think if I was Woody Harrelson, he wasn't the supporting actor.
Exactly. Well, that's
it was
saying.
A two-actor
and this
thing,
is one of the reasons that he's not going to be on next year's True Detective. Because he's like, forget those guys.
No, it's because they screwed me
at awards time.
No,
that's why he's not coming back. And that's why it's going to be Colin Farrell. Who I'm a big fan of.
All right. Anyway, outstanding lead actress, somebody from Downton Abbey, somebody from Good Wife, Claire Danes from Homeland, somebody from House of Cards, Lizzie Kaplan from Masters of Sex, which is another, I think it's Showtime, Rachel.
Showtime.
Kerry Washington.
Three people I've never heard of.
I've not seen any of these shows. I can tell you that Lizzie Kaplan is hilarious in funny roles. I haven't seen her in this thing, but she's great in like comedy type things, so... I hear she's good in this, but I haven't seen it. So we'll skip past that category.
Skip past them.
I think where it gets interesting is we do outstanding lead actor in a comedy series.
Star Central here. This is where it's all at. This is top quality talent here. There's no Bryan Cranston's and Jon Hamm's bunging up this category.
We start with...
Because I've been consistent about where I am on those guys. Listen to our summer movie preview to hear me discuss both Jon Hamm and Bryan Cranston.
I pressed the wrong button. So we start with... Jim Parsons in The Big Bang Theory. Oh, wow, this is kind of weird. This isn't working properly.
Oh.
I've pressed the right thing.
Well, just show that clip anyway.
Yeah, so one is Matt LeBlanc in Showtime's. He does a sort of a mockumentary type thing where it's supposed to be him, but it's not really him.
She was great. Yeah, you remember her? Totally.
It feels a little sitcom-y, but he's playing, it's obviously not really him, but he's playing like, oh, Matt LeBlanc.
Big show in England.
But like this scene is he got busted. Is that right?
Yeah.
He gets busted for a DUI kind of thing. So I don't think it's saying that Matt LeBlanc has actually gotten busted for a DUI. Maybe he has. I don't know. But
we're actually going to do a Seinfeld episode in the next couple of weeks.
What does that have to do with Matt LeBlanc?
Well, if you listen, I'm going to explain. All the dudes on Friends, they've kind of crashed and burned. Matt LeBlanc is doing this, and his reputation is terrific because of it. But I know in England it is.
Well, first of all, Jennifer Aniston hasn't crashed and burned.
Really? What Jennifer Aniston movies are you running out to see?
Crashed and burned is not the same as whether I love them as a critical success.
When they were on Friends, they were huge. Now they're less. That's crashing and burning.
No way. She's making way more money than she ever did as Friends. She's in that Horrible Bosses 2 is coming out now, and star of that. My point is that's not a crash and burn.
It is. Crash and burn scenario.
What's his name? Schwimmer? He's in that.
Yeah, what's he in?
He was in that Iceman movie that we touted and never saw last year with Michael Shannon.
There you go. We didn't see it.
I just saw it this week. It was excellent, and he was pretty good.
No one's touting David Schwimmer as the next Batman.
So you've got that. You've got. Have you watched this Derek? No, because you don't have Netflix.
I don't have Netflix. Yeah,
Shows. You know this Derek character though, isn't this like a Ricky Gervais character from his old shows?
Yeah. Oh, for his podcast or something. Yeah.
I don't get it. This is the day room. Is he supposed to be like learning disabled or something like that? And this is sort of funny. Is that supposed to be what the deal is? Let's see. I said I was going to put this in. Jack,
your work here. You know, hand me downs. These glasses aren't mine.
I'm trying to get to the clip that I was trying to isolate something a little bit here. It's going very poorly.
Computer. Chris Marshall gave it to us. Been loads of famous people here giving us stuff. Look, that's
Chris Marshall, somebody famous.
Before she was famed.
I thought it was
maybe an English person. No, yeah, he was me.
I live in America.
Chris Marshall. You know Chris Marshall off the BT adverts. They're not his real kids, but he's bringing them up
somebody's
anyway.
Somebody's on a commercial.
Okay. My favourite thing on here is YouTube, and my favourite YouTube thing is animals, and my favourite animal thing is hamster on a piano. Listen.
I think Ricky Gervais is comedy genius myself.
Well, I know you're a big fan of his.
I'm a big fan of his. I know that people in England feel he's jumped the shark, but I still think he's, you know, pound
for pound. That's what I was wondering. If the people in England think he's jumped the shark, I think I'm in the same boat.
Pound for pound, I still think he's
hilarious. I used to like him on a lot of things, but he's very funny in Louis C.K. when he used to be on that sort of stuff.
He's great in that.
Which brings us to another one of the nominees is Louis C.K. I have a whole month. Louis C.K. I could spend a long time. Maybe he's nominated as actor.
I think we're going to do
I don't think he'll win that.
No.
Also nominated Outstanding Writing for a Comedy Series. I don't know how he can't win Outstanding Writing for a Comedy Series.
Well,
now,
I'm going to tell you why he can't. I actually think the current series just concluded of Louis C.K. is the weakest of the Louis C.K. series. So again, it's one of those things where, yeah, he'll probably win because he's Louis C.K. Well, he should have won before. But in a weird way, it's like when, and again, to go to the Oscars, it's like when they give you an Oscar towards the end and you're sitting there going, you know, it's great that Paul Newman just won for that. But you know something? It doesn't change the fact that he's had four other performances that were better that he should have won for. I'm all for Louis C.K. getting an award. I actually don't think he should get it for this season. And I love Louis C.K.
It was a weird season, but and it is the reason I put up multiple clips is because I've recommended the show to people before.
Turn the volume up. Let's do it.
I need to get to the particular point. No. The first part of this clip is too rough. People will never tune into the show if I play the first part of the clip. I wanted to get to.
Well, yeah, but you can't sort of go, I don't want to play you.
Yeah, but the point is,
they tune in and they get an earful of that. And then they go, seriously?
Well, the point is that you need to see it in more than these snippets.
You have no right to talk to me like that.
Actually, I do. That's the whole thing. That's how that room works. I have a right to talk. I'm actually paid to talk in there.
He's talking to a heckler after the show.
He's giving
him
business,
It's a show.
Oh, my God. Get over yourself. I mean, people come to these shows and they talk. That's what they do. And it's your job to put up with it. Or learn how to deal with it, at least. Why are you being such a baby?
Okay, look, let me ask you a question. Do you like your life?
Yes. So?
Yeah, no, I'm sure you do. You're a student, you're happy, you have good days, and you have full and fun nights, right?
Yes. I'm not a loser like you.
Yeah, see, that's the whole point. You have a good life, and it's just the way you want it to be. These guys, comedians, me, these guys don't have a life. This is all they have. Their days are shit. They don't have many friends. They don't have families. They have this. The only good part of their lives is the 15 minutes that they get to be on stage. Maybe once a week, sometimes once a month. And you took that 15 minutes, the one, just picture this, the one 15 minutes that they would have had that they would have enjoyed maybe for a long time, and you ruined it. You took that away from them. I know you think it's cute, but it's not. It's a rotten.
Yeah, I'm with Louis C.K. on this one. She should have kept her mouth shut while he was doing
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, she was a bad heckler, and she was really obnoxious.
Doesn't
right
he end up sleeping with her or something on that episode?
No, I think the gist, we may not get far enough in this, is the other comedians are watching, and at the end of this scene, he's almost got her convinced to feel bad, but he sort of throws it away. Like, he says, fine, go away. And, the guys are like, oh, I think she would have taken you out for a drink at that point.
That's what it was, yeah.
So they didn't do it. But so, on the same show, the same show as that's there. I don't know if this will come across on YouTube, but say I'm eating this all up with Louis C.K.'s because I'm such a big fan. Yeah, this will take some more. Some Hungarian neighbor, and they end up playing violin in the stairwell with his daughter. And it's not really a comedy. I don't know what it is. It's real life. It's real New York life is what it is.
Yeah, but this was the interesting thing about the fourth series of Louis C.K.
Maybe it's not real life. It's not real life, but it's like a dramatization.
I almost felt like it just started getting weird and off the wall and surreal.
Oh, but I love that.
I do like that, but it...
the only point of this clip, they end up doing 2 minutes of violin playing, and it's this big, beautiful moment amongst the three of them.
Criticism about the latest series of Louis C.K. is I felt like it got surreal without really being very funny or without saying something to me about my own life that's Louis C.K.'s act is it's funny, but it's also quite close to the bone in terms of, yes, I'm going to talk about masturbation and you identify with that. I do not identify with 4 minutes of a woman playing a violin in a hallway. And so to me, it's just sort of surreal for surreal sake. And I did feel in his last series, which I think is the weakest of the series that he's done, I did feel it fell back on that a bit too often. That being said, unlike Billy Joel, where I've gone, yeah, very good, very professional, I still think Louis C.K. is a genius, and I'm still going to watch every minute of anything I can of his because I think he's pretty
good. All right, I buy that. I would say I see what you're saying in terms of that. There were a bunch of storylines in the past where you could directly interfere. I think now it's getting more artistic in that this is it's not that we're all going to identify with having a Hungarian neighbor who doesn't speak English.
It's kind of some wacky 60s French movie. Louis C.K. actually, unfortunately, I hate to say this, he should not win this year.
Well, he's not going to win lead actor because he's not a lead actor. He's not.
But it's not a show.
But he's not a great actor. I mean, these other people are better actors.
Well, being nominated?
He should be. He should, because they don't really know what to do with him. Should win the writing one because it's the best written comedy.
All right, I'll give you that.
But one of the other nominees in comedy series is Don Cheadle in House of Lies. And I tried to watch or find a clip of this that was actually comedy.
Is that a Netflix show?
I don't know.
Or is it pay cable?
I think it's pay cable.
It's HBO, Showtime, something like that. Yeah.
But I couldn't find – it's Showtime, actually. Now I wrote it down. But I could not find anything that was actually comedy. And so I'm I'm totally baffled.
I want to say this about Don Cheadle, who I love. But unfortunately, the minute he did the world's worst Cockney accent in the Ocean's movies, I just lost all due respect for him. I can't look at John Cheadle the same way. He's like some modern day Dick Van Dyke.
Okay,
that's unfortunate. I love John Cheadle.
No, but I can't figure out.
Out of sight.
So in lead
the
actress,
one Hotel Rwanda.
In lead actress, we've got Lena Dunham
for the
and girls.
Sins of
Melissa
being
McCarthy.
In the Ocean's movies with George Clooney and I.
We might have a bunch of people who listen who see Mike and Molly. I'm not sure. Taylor Schilling in Orange Is the New Black.
Never heard
again.
Of any
I
of
looked.
People.
I looked for the clips on that were usable. Totally not. Couldn't find a thing, and you told me not to play any of this stuff, but I'm doing it anyway.
All right.
because when we were talking about a Seinfeld show, we're certainly going to talk to about her a bunch. But this show's too hilarious. Too Veep. It's my.
I don't even know what you just said. What are you laughing about?
jolly green jizz face.
Sorry, ma'am.
God damn, why are you even here?
Oh, I came here to tell you that you're a meme, ma'am.
I'm a meme, ma'am? What are you talking about? Speak English, boy.
No, a meme, an internet phenomenon.
Oh, okay. Yes, they're photoshopped.
Which, by the way, this second voice is Anna Chomsky, who people may remember from as a childhood actress.
No, I didn't know that. Mary Magdalene, she's a childhood actress in.
Oh, that movie where she has cancer and... Wait, it's going to hit me here.
You know what? I don't need you to talk.
Different Strokes.
No,
it was Partridge Family.
It was a big deal.
No, it's just
My So-Called Life.
No, it was a movie.
The one with Corky. The movie? I don't know.
I'm going to go look it up.
What did I just say?
I get my movies about kids confused with anything Lindsay Lohan has done.
Veep is enough reason to get HBO.
We're going to talk a length about Veep. Yeah, we're going to talk a length about that when we do our Seinfeld thing.
Just to cover all the bases on it, because we're definitely going to run long.
Because rolling on and you're doing a lot of base covering.
So, in addition, so she's nominated Tony Hale, who is from Arrested Development. You remember him? He's a buster in Arrested Development. He's nominated. He's like her bag handler, kind of take care of her kind of thing. She's the vice president, of course, by the way, as implied and all this sort of stuff. But Anna Chomsky is – I'm going to have to look this up. I'm going to see if I can make you talk about something else. We've got a double nomination in miniseries for Fargo too, with Billy Bob Thornton and Martin Freeman. I suppose that counts as cheating also.
Yeah. I mean, again, this comes back to my point about the Emmys that – it is basically an advert for television, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't think it differs from the Oscars, because the Oscars at some level does denote, sort of officially in the eyes of the marketplace, denotes quality. I don't think the Emmys does the same thing. I don't think whether a show has an Emmy or not has any impact on whether people watch it. And so I do think, as an award show, really, is the Emmys any different than the People's Choice Awards, which is just an excuse to get everyone up and hand out some awards and showcase shows? There's a reason it's on in August, because part of it is it's the TV's way of showcasing their own product, because as the traditional TV season begins in September, hopefully you will go, oh yeah, I need to be watching that channel. I do not feel, unlike the Oscars, that in any way is it a mark of quality? Right. And again, this goes with my theme on this show of people getting awarded for things that they shouldn't. If I'm going to apply those standards to Mr. Billy Joel, then I am going to apply those same standards.
No,
Billy
you Joel. Said you. I'm you, going to apply. You said you move the goalposts on a regular basis, so don't worry about that. Anna Chomsky was in My Girl.
Did I kill 2 minutes there to get you to that?
In My Girl. Yes, you did. By repeating stuff from before, is in My Girl was the big movie where she was.
Yeah, with Lindsay Lohan. Isn't she in that one?
No, good. Like,
big Lindsay Lohan fan.
Is My Girl with Macaulay Culkin when they were little kids and somebody coming of age, a young girl facing somebody has cancer. I can't remember.
Macaulay Culkin from Terminator.
But the interesting thing, Anna Chomsky, is after being a child actor between 1999 and 2005, she quit acting
and worked in insurance.
Went to University of Chicago. I think she. She got a BA in international studies. She worked for Zagat. She did regular work, and then she came back. No, but she's legitimately left and came back.
Didn't Natalie Portman go to Dartmouth and everything?
Yeah, but she always knew she was coming back.
And the chick from Harry Potter movies, the good-looking one, that's like the most downloaded person on the internet.
I don't watch
Harry Potter either. What's her name? Emma Watson.
See, on my side, like when I don't see anything at all, I try not to comment about it, but you know.
Oh, God, what's the matter with you? You're a podcaster. You have to have opinions. You have to have takes.
Couple other quick hits. Outstanding lead actress in a miniseries or movie. One of the nominees is Kristen Wiig from Spoils of Babylon. Did you see any of Spoils of Babylon?
You know, I actually gave that a go, and it was the Will Ferrell thing, and it had Tobey Maguire and all kinds of other people, and I had high hopes for it. And I remember
it was very much like a web series kind of feel to it, cheaply made.
I'm not going to lie to you; I just didn't think it was very good.
I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, it wasn't like this is not the greatest thing in the world, but
maybe because when after I'd seen the trailers, I'm like, I can't wait for that. And then when it wasn't to me side-splittingly funny, I'm like, oh, it wasn't that good. So maybe I'll watch it again a second time and be much fairer on it.
I got another highlight I want to use to talk about a show that people should watch, Portlandia. Do you watch Portlandia?
Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein. And I'm kind of glad it's nominated, though.
Yeah, it's really quite funny. And this is not a recent. This is one of the earlier clips.
Had a pretty amazing trip. I mean,
Fred Armisen is nominated as the best supporting actor, which is interesting because he's.
I have a lot to tell you.
But this is kind of funny here. This bit here, and I think this will play on podcast.
What is it?
Come on.
It also has good music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people were talking about getting piercings and getting tribal tattoos.
Yeah.
And people were singing about saving the planet and forming bands.
Yeah.
There's a place where that idea still exists as a reality, and I've been there.
Where is it?
Portland.
Oregon?
Yeah.
So Portlandia.
Yeah.
Good show.
And it's kind of, you know, if you ever tune it for the first time, just know it's not a...
It's not a conventional...
It's a bunch of skits with sort of semi-sequential plot lines, but it's like almost like a variety show with him. And like in some things, he plays a woman, and other things, he's playing different characters over and over again.
IFC or Sundance?
IFC, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you got another interesting nominee, I think, is Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live, an outstanding supporting actress for a comedy series. You know, they don't always get the SNL people in there, but she's going to go really far. I mean, she does these fantastic impressions, but she's hilarious.
Let me stop you right there.
She's going to be the next Tina Fey.
I understand that, but in a weird way, when the statement SNL and she's going to go a long way, that is actually the exception rather than the rule.
Well, that's why it's notable.
You've got Tina Fey, Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, and that's your lot. Then on the other side you have...
Will Ferrell,
there you go. But then on the other side you have... I've forgotten his name, Rob Schneider, Tim Meadows, and a whole gang of people who crashed and burned.
So that's the whole point. Kristen Why do you think Wiig, I'm calling this out? I don't understand what your point is here.
Kristen Wiig is still... We're still in the... we're going to decide phase with her career whether she is someone who exists beyond Saturday Night Live. That's a brave take you've just had to anoint this chick as the next one. And again, the fact I don't even know your name and you just mentioned it 60 seconds ago shows that you know where I'm coming from. I'm not sure that's going to occur.
It is going to occur. I am guaranteeing it.
Spread.
It's not her.
Oh, because she's kind of attractive, that one.
Well, I shouldn't have. It's Chancellor Angela Merkel. She plays Angela Merkel on the skit.
Guten Abend, Cecily.
Hi.
So tell us your thoughts when you found out that U.S. intelligence was targeting your cell phone.
Cecily, this was a clear violation of my privacy and making matters worse.
Plus, you're English. You should love making fun of German people.
No, I understand that, but that doesn't relate to she's going to be a breakout Hollywood star.
She's gonna,
I mean, I can sit here and do funky German accents.
Yeah.
Bye.
During this time, I made many embarrassing calls. Several hundred to my local brother shop.
Anyway,
all right, so there you go.
Big. Under Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Miniseries... There are four nominees from The Normal Heart, which I have no idea what that is, but it does seem a little bit awkward.
What show is that on? What show is that about?
I don't know. I think it's a pay channel. But
does it have Lindsay Lohan in it?
Jim Parsons is in it, though, which is the guy from the comedy stuff.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Jim Parsons, Joe Mantello, Alfred Molina, and Matt Bomer. I don't know who these people are.
Anything else you want to cover with the Emmys?
More True Detective nominations, including Outstanding Directing for a Drama Series, which we've talked about before. Notable for the fact that most series have multiple directors for different episodes. He directed the entire series, so I think he'll win just basically on that alone.
He's won an award because he worked hard. And I don't have a problem with working hard, but you know something? There are plenty of us working hard.
Outstanding.
I know listeners are probably working hard right at this time as we wander through the Emmys categories.
Well, yeah.
Anything else there on the Emmys? Are you going to watch the Emmys?
Probably won't go out of my way. I'll probably record it.
I want to make one actually serious comment. In looking at all
we watch the Oscars, but we don't usually watch the Emmys.
Looking at all the categories here, I know we've just said, oh, yeah, I've never heard of that show. I think it's kind of nice that the Emmys, you know, they've gone deep into basic cable and deep into pay cable to find its awards. Portlandia being a show that you can only get if you get that station on your cable package. I'm looking here at some other shows. I'm looking at things like...
Louis C.K. is an FX show.
Yeah, but I'm looking at things like Key and Peele is nominated. I think that's a Comedy Central show.
Yep.
You know, I think that says something positive about the Emmys. I also think it says
something negative about the networks.
I was just about to say it is one more thing about the fact that network TV, you guys need to get your acts together.
I think it's, but in a broader sense, to sort of really bring it up another level, it's symptomatic of the current culture of our consumable products generally, in that the folks at the networks have to put out Budweiser and Miller Lite and the stuff that appeals to the largest base possible. But there's so many other possibilities out there. Just like you can buy a craft beer, you can pick a show. And these shows have, like, in the historical sense, horrible ratings. Like, none of these shows have ratings anywhere close to really big shows that would have been nominated for these awards 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But the point is, we have so many more choices now, and so there's so many more interesting types of things. Makes the nomination process a heck of a lot more complicated, because you've got all these weird kind of things that don't necessarily fit together.
Yeah.
It's like rock and rollers that aren't rock and rollers.
And on that very incisive, do you have anything else on Emmys?
I don't.
On that very incisive statement, this has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.